Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we win national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get real banged and bruised, work in a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jason Staples. Today, we're going to be doing a pre-National Signing Day episode discussing some Florida State recruiting. Probably one more episode, actually, before National Signing Day to discuss some of the events after this final recruiting weekend, final official visit weekend in Tallahassee. Lots of things to discuss in that regard. Several things to discuss that have happened since our last podcast, which, as you'll recall, was the bonus Clemson-Alabama breakdown, where I'd suggested that Clemson would beat Alabama unless Alabama went at least plus two in turnover margin, which would give the Crimson Tide a chance in that game, where, as it turned out, Alabama did go plus two in turnover margin in that game, and therefore did have a chance to beat Clemson, but Clemson managed to prevail anyway. Also going to talk about some, there's going to be one question to answer from a listener that came in actually back in at the end of December that I just haven't had the time or the ability to answer. It's a little bit more detailed question, so I want to get to that at the tail end of the show. But before we go any further, there has been some movement in the Florida State recruiting class since I last put out an episode. Namely, the decommitment of DeMarco Artis, three-star linebacker out of the Orlando area, a guy that really, I think, is underrated, a better player than his three-star rating would suggest. I think he really should be probably a four-star kid. His senior tape is excellent, very good closing speed, very physical player. Unfortunately, he just, he overplayed his hand, really, and I think this is a kid that sort of the rumblings out there were that that he had kind of let some other teams get in his ear that maybe Florida State was thinking of him as depth rather than as a top guy, and that's really not the case. I mean, they really liked him. They thought that he had a chance to be a good starter in their system, but ultimately it looks like he's going to wind up at either Baylor or Oregon. And you gotta hand it to Willie Taggart up at Oregon for the job that he's done getting in on some kids late in the process to fill out that class. And if they get DeMarco Artis, then again, that's another player that's going to be a difference maker there. But in all honesty, as much as I like Artis and as much as he would have been a good player in Florida State's system, I'm not sure that they aren't going to wind up upgrading at that position. Reports right now out of Atlanta are that Florida State looks like they're going to wind up being the most likely decision for Leonard Warner. It's between Florida State and Stanford at this point. 6'4", 225-pound inside linebacker, guy who could also play on the edge. Very, very good prospect at linebacker. I think really a better overall prospect than Artis. As much as I like Artis, and Artis maybe has a bit more closing speed, a little bit more of a pass rush kind of more pass rush capacity, but as a true linebacker, you look at Warner, and yeah, he catches blows. You know, he's a catch tackler a little bit more than you'd like to see at that level. But you're looking at a kid that, again, he may or may not get admitted to Stanford, and if he does get admitted to Stanford, then that is a problem for Florida State. I think that the coaching staff is worried that if he does get word here late this over the next week or so that he gets admitted to Stanford, then he may actually wind up out in Palo Alto, which I wouldn't blame him. I mean, honestly, if I were a recruit right now in this current era and I had the chance to get a full ride to Florida State or a full ride to Stanford, I'm sorry, but as much as I love Florida State, as much as I think Florida State's a great school, as much as I valued my time there, as much as I like the coaching staff in Tallahassee, I'm probably going to Stanford. And even more so if I had a kid, if this was my son, and my son had the chance to, and my son wasn't a quarterback with NFL potential, that may change it a little bit because of Fisher's record with quarterbacks. But aside from that, if it's my son and my son has the opportunity to go play football on a full ride at Stanford, yeah, that's probably where I'm sending him. That's probably where I'm encouraging him to go. Now, of course, he could make his own decisions, but, man, it's really hard to beat a Stanford degree. And, you know, you think about this on the other end of things, you know, from Warner's perspective, you have a young black man with a Stanford undergraduate degree, and that definitely sells after college. Now, that said, you know, the Florida State degree is pretty good, and anytime you can say you played football at Florida State, that's also going to be a pretty big deal on the job market for a lot of people, even if you know go pro in something other than sports. But in any case, Leonard Warner, I think, more than likely winds up in Tallahassee as sort of the replacement in that spot for DeMarco Artis. Now, they'd have taken both of them, I think, but Warner, a pretty good filler there if they're going to lose Artis. And really, the issue with Artis is that they wanted to make sure that he locked it down, that they knew that his spot was that he wanted to be in the class, that he was going to be there, and that he was not going to be a National Signing Day flip. They did not want to have happen what happened last year with Jamel Cook flipping to USC at, like, not just the 11th hour, but basically the 12th hour. They were not going to have that happen this year and wind up turning away an excellent player only to have that spot not filled. And so ultimately they basically said, are you in or you out? You're going to have to go or get off. And he hesitated, he blinked, and they said, well, I'm sorry, if you're not going to guarantee, if you can't guarantee that you're coming to Tallahassee for the final visit weekend and that you're shutting it down, then we're going to have to part ways, because we can't afford, given the numbers crunch, to hold a spot for a guy that we're not sure is going to be here. And in that case, you really can't blame the coaching staff for that. But in any case, Leonard Warner, very, very good prospect. Really like what I see from him. Another thumper. I mean, that Florida State has really not had the sort of stereotypical Alabama linebackers for quite a while. And now they're going to have two of those guys in Jackson, Dontavius Jackson, and now Leonard Warner, if he winds up in Tallahassee as expected. Those are two of those sort of big, rugged, and rugged is kind of the adjective that comes out in my head when I see Leonard Warner on tape. He's a rugged player. It reminds me actually of James Wilder Jr.'s high school linebacker footage as well. So basically a James Wilder Jr. type physical prospect, just not wanting to play running back. You know, a guy that very easily could wind up carrying 235, 240 pounds in college, although you may not want him to carry that much, very easily could carry that, and then has the length and the athleticism to still cover and be a real asset against the spread. So a really, really good prospect that for Florida State to wind up getting in on here late in the game. I mean, they've been on him from the beginning. They've wanted him in the class from the beginning, but for a long, long time, it looked like it was going to be Stanford or Georgia, and it looks like Georgia may have run out of spots. And that's to Florida State's benefit. I mean, Warner always liked Florida State in the process, but it just wasn't sure that he was going to wind up really being the guy in Tallahassee. But it turns out that may be his final destination. And if Artis is out of the class, which that's what's happened, if it comes down to me picking between the two of them, I'm going to take Warner just by a nose. But I'm going to prefer Warner for Florida State's system. Now, this also brings up another point that Florida State has done a better job, I think, in this particular class, really managing the numbers and balancing between pursuing the very, very, very top talent that they're trying to land at the 11th hour, some of these guys that remain uncommitted late in the process, and leaving themselves great options in case those guys decide to go somewhere else. And, you know, that hasn't always been the case. I mean, you go back to Malik McDowell and, can't remember the name of the kid that wound up going to Missouri. Also, Jamel Cook last year. There have been some cases where they've kind of been left out in the cold and have wound up a player or two short in a recruiting class because they were pretty confident that a kid was coming and really didn't have a great hedge in case he didn't. And in this year's class, that's not the case. They've done a great job establishing both sort of the reaches in terms of what guys can they go after that are out of state high hanging fruit versus the guys that are the hedges in case those guys don't want to wind up on campus and are still really legitimate guys that will be good recruits, solid players that belong at Florida State. And I think they've done a better job than that, or a better job in this cycle than they have so far under Jimbo Fisher. And it really reflects on how they've done a great job even self-scouting in recruiting. And that's one of the best things about Jimbo Fisher as a head coach is how flexible he is and how much he is willing to re-examine the process and make adjustments where necessary, both in terms of how he runs his offense and even how he runs recruiting on some of these things. But there is another player that Florida State did flip, so not just a decommit here, but a new commit. This is a flip from South Carolina, and that's Hamza Nasiruddin. And this guy, honestly, is immediately one of my favorite recruits in the class, one of my favorite prospects in this class, and is going to be regardless of who they land from here. I mean, I think Cam Akers is maybe I think he's one of the running back early enrollee from Mississippi is one of the two or three best prospects, regardless of position in the country. So obviously you have to put him at the top of your list. Then you got Josh Kando, who probably a top 10 overall recruit, one of the two best defensive end prospects in the country, along with Jalen Phillips, the kid from California, who's going to wind up going to UCLA. Kando and he are the two best defensive end prospects I saw this year. And, you know, those two guys obviously are sort of at the head of the class as almost can't miss guys, along with Stanford Samuels, the legacy recruit at corner. Those three guys, kind of your can't miss cornerstone recruits for this class. And the guy that most excites me outside of those three guys, out of anyone else in this class, including, you know, Marvin Wilson, who's arguably the top defensive tackle prospect in the country, including all these other guys, the guy that most excites me is Nasiruddin. This guy, the reason is there just are not very many guys that are 6'4", 205, 210 pounds coming out of high school who run and have hips and explosiveness and flexibility and position flexibility like this guy. If you want to stop the spread, you got to have guys like this. And this guy, I mean, I think he is in a lot of respects sort of a Derwin James type. And I'm not saying he's going to wind up being Derwin. I mean, Derwin is a different category in lots of things in terms of his physicality and his football IQ and all sorts of other things. But when it comes down to a guy that can play multiple positions, can play them all extremely well, can run like a corner, cover like a corner, hit like a linebacker, play in the box, play at free safety, cover a wide receiver out wide, rush the passer, do all of those things, this is one of those kids that can do it. And there aren't very many of those guys, and especially guys that are 6'4" and long. That's really, really rare. I mean, this is a kid that when he was at the Florida State camp over the summer, at 6'4", was out wide covering wide receivers and doing it with some success. Not many guys can do that. And then do that at 210, and a kid that could probably very easily carry 230 if he wanted to, and plays physical, could play wide receiver if it came to it. I mean, you're talking about an explosive wide receiver prospect. Massive, massive get for Florida State to bring in another elite level defensive back prospect. I think a lot of people going into the U.S. Army All-American game expected him to be to wind up growing into a linebacker. I mean, you just look at his frame and you say that guy's going to be a linebacker. I mean, 247 actually has him listed as an outside linebacker. And then he went into the U.S. Army All-American game and yet again was matching up against wide receivers and covering like a top-flight defensive back. And the thing that sticks out, and you saw this in the game, I mean, there's one play where he actually had an opportunity to intercept it and batted it down sort of oddly, but what you could see is the rare closing speed and the length to get to the football and pass coverage that just not many guys have. And when you've got a guy that can play center field at 6'4" with that kind of wingspan, it just serves as a major eraser. And again, against the spread, those guys with the big wingspan they just give you so much additional security against all the things that happen in the spread, where you're trying to create seams and all this, and it closes down. It takes away a couple of the extra yards in width of the field that might be there, because the guy can reach out and make a tackle. He winds up making an arm tackle, and you know, you get the offense off the field instead of that being a little bit of extra space against a shorter or not quite so long of a player, where it winds up going for 20 or 30 yards because the shorter player can't reach him. This is one of those guys that you just have to be able to stop the spread and stop it efficiently. And, you know, the other thing is, in terms of special teams, these guys are monsters. And he's going to be a special teams monster from day one at Florida State. And, you know, the best case scenario is that he winds up being the understudy to Derwin James this year. And then basically they can wind up doing the same kinds of things with him. You know, again, there's going to be a drop off from Derwin to anyone, but the same kinds of things schematically and in terms of flexibility with him that they've been able to do with Derwin, where, you know, you go seven defensive backs and you line them up in the box, or you line them up as a extra pass rusher, or you line them up in the box and wind up dropping them deep into the middle of the field to play free safety, or you have him man up against the tight end and he can do it because of the length. There's just so many things you can do defensively with this kind of athlete that it's a really, really exciting get for Florida State. It's a kid that, you know, when I watched him early in the process, it was one of those like, man, be really, really good to get him, but I just don't think they're going to be able to pull him. And sure enough, it wound up being very fortunate that he went to the same high school in Concord, North Carolina, just a little bit. It's a suburb of Charlotte that Florida State running backs coach Jay Graham went to. And, you know, his father knew Jay Graham going way back, and that wound up being the difference. And huge, huge get for Florida State in all this. And, you know, I think I did mention before some discussion of Ontario Wilson being the other recent get for Florida State, and a guy that wasn't even rated by the services at cornerback before Florida State offered him. And they offered him over guys like Latavius Brinney and William Poole and Amir Speed and a number of these other guys because they believe that he's going to be better than those guys. And honestly, after watching his tape, it's hard not to agree with him. And when, you know, only thing that I wasn't sure about is, okay, he looks fast on this tape, but I don't know the competition. How good of an athlete is he? And then I saw his triple jump numbers and his 400 meters and some of these other things. And I went, oh wow, this is a kid that didn't even run track full time because he's playing baseball and he's putting up these numbers. This kid's a Florida State level athlete. And one of the things that Ontario Wilson brings into play is he's another guy who, his hand strength and his ability to hands catch and to do things in that regard at the defensive back position really sticks out. And having those guys makes a difference in terms of turnovers. That's something I remember talking about when Nate Andrews came out, is his hand strength and his ability to pluck the football was rare as a high schooler. And he wound up creating a lot of turnovers early in his career before injuries really, really caught up to him there. Because of his ability to catch the ball in places where ordinary or normal guys would have just batted it down. And Wilson's one of those guys. He shows the ability, you know, the flexible hips and the explosiveness that you want at that position. He's got excellent length, and then also shows the ability to break down and burst back on the ball. Good instincts and strong hands. I think another good pickup, and a guy that, you know, again, they've done a really good job in the past when they've offered a kid like this in the past that's sort of been late. They've had a pretty good record of recognizing a kid that belongs despite what the services may or may not say. And I think this is another pickup that's solid. Now, before we go any further, I will, for those of you who are not major recruitniks at this point, sort of break down where Florida State stands going into this last weekend. Obviously, they already have their early enrollees on campus with Bailey Hockman, the quarterback, who is an important get given the lack of depth at quarterback and the fact that he is a, even though, you know, maybe not as high of a ceiling as some other guys, you know, there's some question as to how close to maxed out he is developmentally, but he's a guy that has a high football IQ and as an early enrollee may wind up being somebody that could be a good security in case DeAndre Francois gets injured as really the only quality quarterback on Florida State's roster. Otherwise, Hockman is a kid that may be able to pick up Fisher's offense quickly enough as an early enrollee to potentially give a little bit better option than J.J. Cosentino on the roster in case of emergency. So that's an important get. Obviously, Cam Akers, Josh Kando, who we already mentioned, Trey McKitty, the tight end, Adonis Thomas, the JUCO linebacker who was originally at Alabama, very good match for Florida State's system and scheme. And also his experience in Alabama's scheme, which is so similar, will allow him to pick things up and potentially contribute more early as a result of that experience. And then Stan Samuels III and Cyrus Fagan as the remainder of that class. That would be a good recruiting class for most teams on its own. But then on top of that, Florida State has super high ceiling quarterback James Blackman, running back Kalon LeBourne, who got a fifth star late in the process. That's something I actually disagree with. I think he's more of a four-star running back. I think the reason he got his fifth star is because he was so clearly the best running back in the Under Armour All-America game. But I think maybe the best four running backs in the country were all at the U.S. Army All-America game, so they didn't get to stick out the same way that he did. But either way, a very, very good player and a great fit for what Florida State did. I think the comp for LeBourne is actually Devontae Freeman, very similar backs. Zaquandre White, running back from down in the Tampa area, who I think is very underrated, even though he's a top 10 running back in the country in the 247 composite. DJ Matthews, sort of mercurial wide receiver. Tamorian Terry, a 6'4" wide receiver who is a freak athlete. Alexander Marshall, a bigger tight end who can play in line. Offensive lineman Brady Scott. The two defensive tackles from over Gainesville way, both Florida State, connected to Florida State by family, Jalen Parks and Corey Durden. Durden in particular, I think, is underrated. He's an unusually good athlete for a 300-pounder. Trey Lawson, the recent get as a defensive end. I can't remember if we covered him in a prior podcast, but another guy that recently committed and has some size, and as a sort of mid 3-star commit, is the kind that you want to bring in because he's got so much length at 6'6", and you know, he's carrying 250 very comfortably. You watch his high school tape, and the athleticism is what sticks out. And really, this is the kind of thing you want. You want to get that kind of guy as your three-star kind of glue guy, because he's a big body that then, depending on what happens, okay, he either winds up blossoming into an outstanding and very athletic, very long, strong side defensive end. Maybe he grows past that into a three technique. Maybe he does the Rick Leonard thing and turns out being a really athletic, conversion to an offensive tackle. What they've done is they've gone and they've gotten a very athletic, very, very high ceiling, long, big-framed athlete that can contribute and probably is going to wind up a draft pick somewhere. Then you got Dekalon Brooks and Hamza Nasirildeen and Ontario Wilson, who we've already talked about, as the current class. That's going to leave, at this point, four and maybe a maximum of five spots to this point that are remaining coming into this last weekend. Most likely four spots left, but maybe, depending on what happens with some possible medical disqualifications, some other elements in terms of what happens, you know, in terms of the overall recruiting class, there may be a fifth spot. Question is, who gets those four or five spots? Already said that I think I'm penciling in Leonard Warner. That's going to depend a little bit on what happens with Stanford, but I'm going to pencil Leonard Warner from the Atlanta area in there, from Snellville. Actually, I used to live in Snellville. From Leonard Warner, I'm penciling into one of those spots. Another guy that I'm penciling in is Levi Jones, the linebacker from the Houston area. Another really good fit for Florida State's scheme. 6'3", 6'4" kid who is more of a twitchy linebacker, kind of the explosive coverage linebacker that, again, Florida State just covets with the length and the explosiveness to do a lot. And again, you add those two guys and you've added a ton on special teams. We'll talk more about this on a future episode as well. That leaves two more spots. And Florida State continues to feel very good about defensive tackle Marvin Wilson, with whom they had their final official visit just yesterday. They continue to think that they're gonna that they've got as good a shot as any with that. And honestly, you know, that's one of those things you gotta hand it to Odell Higgins. When he goes all out for a kid, he does not lose them very often. Odell Higgins has done a terrific job from beginning to end working with Marvin Wilson, and he has logged a ton of hours, often not tweeting about it. You know, a lot of people don't realize how often Odell Higgins has been in Houston to see Marvin Wilson, but that he has logged a ton of hours and a ton of flight time making his trips over to see Marvin Wilson to make it clear how important a prospect he is to Florida State. When Odell goes that all out for a kid, he rarely whiffs. And really the only thing that I think is a concern here is that LSU is the competition, and with Ed Orgeron, another guy who rarely misses on the defensive line prospects that he targets that hard, being the competition. And then, you know, basically LSU being so much closer to Houston than Tallahassee, that's the real concern. But as of right now, I'm going to pencil Marvin Williams into the Florida State class. So that leaves one, maybe two spots left for this class. Marvin Wilson, Levi Jones, and Leonard Warner are the three guys that I'm penciling in. And I'm going to pencil a fourth guy in based on some other things that I've heard of late. And that's Henry Ruggs III, who happens also to be Alabama's number one wide receiver on their board. Florida State really believes that they've got this kid, that he's going to wind up in Tallahassee. And this would be 2 years in a row that Florida State will have landed. If it happens, it would be 2 years in a row that Florida State would have landed Alabama's number one wide receiver prospect, going head to head with the Tide and winning out. And honestly, sort of behind the scenes thing about this, if Florida State does land, and even if they don't land Henry Ruggs, which right now, I'm very confident putting Henry Ruggs in Florida State's class at this point. You got to give a lot of credit, a ton of credit to Lawrence Dossey, the wide receiver coach at Florida State, who has done a magnificent job recruiting Ruggs, building comfort, a comfort level with him as his future position coach, building a comfort level with his family. And if Florida State's able to go into Alabama and get Alabama's top wide receiver prospect, that's saying a lot, man. But as of right now, I'm penciling four into Florida State's class. Ruggs, Wilson, Levi Jones, and Leonard Warner. That's a wide receiver, defensive tackle, and two linebackers as the core for their close. And there may be one spot left. And the guys left for that spot are Devontae Smith from Louisiana, who I think more likely than not winds up at Alabama, but man, he's another guy that they feel pretty good about, but just not to the same level of confidence as what they have about Ruggs. But I think they'd take both of them if they could. But Devontae Smith, I think, probably winds up at Alabama. But again, he's another guy that they'll probably hold a spot open for. Neil Farrell, another defensive tackle prospect. A little bit of an interesting prospect, Farrell. In high school, lines up on the edge a good bit. A lot of burst for a guy that's his size. A pretty versatile type prospect. The kind of guy that you could line up at strong side defensive end or at defensive tackle and move around a little bit. Really, really nice prospect. Some good burst from him. Jerez Parks, the defensive end prospect that they're going head-to-head with Alabama for, but I'm not honestly sure that they've got a spot for him at this point, because I think they'd take Devontae Smith or Neil Farrell above him. There's still a chance that Malik Gray, the safety from Tennessee, ends up visiting. If he visits, then I would expect him to flip, and he's another guy that they would hold at that fifth spot for. Beyond that, I'm not sure that we'll see another guy in. If they didn't land any of those guys, it's possible that B.J. Thompson, the jumbo athlete, 6'7" kid from England, Arkansas, winds up getting that fifth spot. But I think that's only if they don't get Smith, Farrell, or Gray as that last spot. So I think we can pencil four in, and then that fifth spot, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm not sure they have room. I mean, they're already going to have to do a lot of moving around, and there's going to have to be some guys that are going to get some medical DQs and you know, transfer out or just finish their time in the program for them to take this many. But you know, if the right guy wants in, I mean, I could imagine that they would try to expand it to six more spots. I'm just not sure they're going to have that ability. In any case, I'm really curious to see what the reports are going to be coming out of this weekend. Word that I was getting is that this weekend is going to be, I mean, there are some special events as it was put in play for this weekend. They're really rolling out the carpet for some guys that they think they've got a real shot at in the close to really give themselves a chance. And, you know, one other guy, by the way, I should mention that is an outside chance that he could possibly visit is Willie Gay. The linebacker from Starkville, Mississippi. I think Willie Gay is going to wind up going to LSU, and I doubt he even winds up visiting Florida State. But you know, they've tried to flip him, and Cam Akers has really, really pushed for that kid to visit. And if he visits, then there's an outside chance that you know they could land him as well. But I just think they got in on him too late. But so it's worth mentioning him. But that's where things stand at this point. Going into the weekend, the final weekend for Florida State, I'm going to do most likely one more podcast just in advance of National Signing Day, talking about some of my expectations for what we can see, and it may be a little bit clearer at that point on who they expect to land for that fifth spot, and whether or not they've had to recalculate or recalibrate on you know who they've got room for and who they don't, and I think at that point we'll have some idea of whether Warner got into Stanford as well. So it's going to be interesting. I think Florida State is better placed going into National Signing Day than they have been in terms of being able to fill out the class without any real disappointments. I mean, obviously they'd be disappointed if they didn't land Marvin Wilson after putting all the resources into and all the effort into landing a kid that they think a lot of. But you know, if they don't land him, they're going to have someone else most likely who's a Florida State level player to fill that spot. And that's something they've done a tremendous job of this year. They deserve a tremendous amount of credit for, again, continuing to learn and to improve as they learn to project and work with what they've got and filling out their class. So, that's going to end our recruiting portion of the podcast. There's one other thing, as I mentioned, at the beginning, there's a question that was asked on Facebook. You know, you can find this podcast on Facebook, as the Unconquered Podcast. And you can ask any questions you want answered, on the podcast through that podcast or through the Facebook group. But there was a question that was asked there. This was back in, December, actually, and it's from Dan from New Orleans. And I'm just going to go ahead and read the question in full. Hey, Jason. Love the podcast. I know you are involved in academia and religious studies. I would love to hear this question answered on the podcast, or if you can just respond to me via Facebook if it's too much of a fringe topic for a football podcast, which it's not. Quick question. I was watching Jimbo talk to the media today, and he said for Christmas they had dinner and then had chapel. This got me wondering as to what the non-religious players do during this time period. Can they opt out? Or would that be socially or culturally unacceptable within the mold of how the program operates? I know Bobby had a preacher's mentality 24/7 and didn't separate religion from ball. Does Jimbo lead the program like that as well? Just wondering if you had any insight on how players deal with this if they're not religious. Do they stay silent so they don't ostracize themselves, or has there ever been any players who think similarly to Arian Foster that would speak out or abstain from any religious practices? Thanks, go Noles. Dan from New Orleans. Now, this is a great question, actually. And it just so happens that Jimbo Fisher actually addressed this question directly in a discussion that I was present for in 2014. And unfortunately, I had a hard drive malfunction a while back and lost some of my audio files from that period. So I had to go and get another recording of this particular interview. But he addresses this. I'm going to go ahead and play Jimbo Fisher's answer to a very similar question back in 2014, and then I'll come back with a few additional comments.
I'm not scared to say who my God is. Now, I think there's a fine line in those things, and I respect everybody's opinion. But because they have their opinion, why can't we have our opinion? I mean, that's what this country was founded on. God and country. And I have no problem with that. And, you know, Dabo, I don't know what all went on. I have no knowledge of that situation. But all these groups say you can't. Well, if they can't, why can't we? I mean, it works both ways. And now, if everybody has their own opinion about things, and when we pray as an organization, I say for someone who has a problem, you can please remove yourself. You know, I mean, I respect that and I do that. But that's what we're going to do. It's your choice. That's one of your choices. My personal choice is to do it.
So that's basically how Jimbo responded to this question of you know, team prayer and some of these other things. You know, and again, this extends to chapel participation and all of this. And he made it very clear. Listen, if a player doesn't feel comfortable with this, or if a player doesn't want to participate, I make it very clear, he says. You know, he makes it very clear that you don't have to participate in this. You can excuse yourself. You can, you know, not be a part of this. And that's fine. Now, honestly, actually, that isn't all that common. Now, back when I played, there were guys that really didn't, you know, care one way or another for, you know, Bowden's particular proclivities in the religious realm. But generally, they would either go to chapel and just kind of sit there and not really worry about it, or, you know, they didn't have to. And it's the same situation here. But the thing is, it's actually less common than you'd expect, because a lot of these guys, if you think about culturally where a lot of these kids come from, the chapel phenomenon and you know, pregame prayers for teams and everything, that is part of the fabric of where these kids are coming from most of the time. So 95, 96 times out of 100, it's a non-issue that, you know, it's just, you know, something that you do. Some of the guys are more serious about it than others. But generally speaking, you know, nobody really cares. And you know, when they all get together before the game and they say the Lord's Prayer, and when they do the same thing after the game, again, some guys may or may not say it, but you know, they're there, and it really, you know, again, it doesn't matter. And in these kind of team environments, nobody's really paying attention to who is and who isn't saying this sort of thing. But you know, it's the coach tends to lead those things pretty often, and that's pretty common. But once again, it's not mandatory by any stretch, and it's the sort of thing that if a player wanted to basically make a statement that, you know, I don't believe in any of this, or I want to abstain or whatever, the coaching staff is generally going to be perfectly fine with that player stating that view, and those kinds of discussions do happen in locker rooms. I mean, they did back when I was at Florida State, where, you know, certain things would come up, and, well, you know, do you really believe this, or I'm not really. You know, I don't buy this, or, you know, I don't think that this is the case. You know, there are the Arian Fosters there. But even Foster, I mean, Foster in the interviews that he had about his position, he talked about how some of his best friends and some of the guys that he had the most respect for were evangelical Christians on his team, and that they would go out to eat and they'd go and do all sorts of stuff together because, you know, they had a lot of respect together, and they'd have arguments and debates about these various things. And that's the sort of thing that is very much permitted and very much really encouraged to some degree on these teams. And, you know, the thing that would be discouraged is a player basically making such a fuss about either attending or not attending, or participating or not participating, to the degree that it would bring discord on the team. And that's something that the coaches would try to step in and say, okay, listen, you can't just be policing the other players on whether or not they're saying the Lord's Prayer with us or not. You can't, you know, complain about, you know, the guys who do want to say the Lord's Prayer to such a degree that you bring discord among the team. And that's really where the line is ultimately going to get drawn with these sort of things. So, you know, that's that in terms of the whether or not players can deal with it if they're not religious, and, you know, what their options are. Now, as far as Jimbo himself, there's another piece to this that I think is pretty interesting. And that is, and that's something that, you know, when Jimbo, pretty soon after Jimbo first took over, I got the chance to talk to Clint Purvis, who was the team chaplain. But he was the team chaplain going all the way back to well before me, when I was at Florida State. So, you know, I got to talk to Clint, and I asked him, I said, you know, given the transition between, Coach Bowden and Jimbo, how's that transition worked for you? You know, what's the sort of ethos now in this regard? And I was surprised by what I heard. And that's, you know, Clint basically said, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect, but to be honest, Jimbo has really rolled out the carpet for me, and he's made sure that, you know, I have every resource possible to help as many guys as possible, to the point where, you know, Clint has an open door, has an office in the Moore Center with an open door to be able to have kids come in and out as they please, to make sure that if anybody has a problem, if anybody wants access to him, Jimbo wanted him there. And he said, you know, the degree of support that he got from Jimbo upon taking over was really surprising. Just because, again, he knew that Coach Bowden in that regard was a little bit unusual, and didn't really necessarily expect things to remain in that line. And he said, if anything, Fisher wanted him to be more involved with the program, wanted him to be more of a voice to make sure that guys had, you know, access to a sounding board and had access to someone like him as the team chaplain to be able to bounce stuff off of him and to deal with things when they were frustrated or to bring girl problems or whatever to bring to him. And he wanted him there. And he said, you know, that was something that was a little surprising. And the other thing is how, Jimbo has set an example in chapel with his boys and all this other stuff. He said, you know, Jimbo is never going to be Coach Bowden, you know, one of those guys who's going to, you know, lead with this and have the public persona and kind of do the Tebow or the Dabo, you know, I want to thank my Lord and Savior for, you know, winning me this game and, you know, these sorts of things and really leading with that on the public side. And he said, but privately, Jimbo is a man of very deep convictions and his own and a very strong religious perspective personally, and does not keep that a secret from his players either, and doesn't keep that a secret behind the scenes, but rather tries to set an example, leading more in that way and really pushing things by example and saying, this is how I'm going to do things, and, you know, sort of by implication working from there, much more than any sort of public persona, or, you know, with Coach Bowden, there were times where basically he would go almost into preacher mode. Fisher won't do that, but he has his also has his own personal, very strong personal religious stance and his own religious take, and he's not going to hide that in any way. And rather would rather his players and those around him see that and basically do things more sort of on the by example side in that regard. So just another interesting thing. I figured if that was a worthwhile question to address. I think there's probably a lot of people out there who listen to this podcast who'll be interested in hearing some of that. I do think, you know, that it's an interesting question as well in terms of the religious freedom question when it comes to, you know, state schools and all that. But, you know, there's nothing against religious freedom for people in the workplace, like Jimbo Fisher, for professors even, to have their own stated faith. And even, you know, for, you know, team events and that sort of thing, to have voluntary prayer among those who want to participate in it. There's nothing especially wrong with those things from a church state situation, as long as it's very clear that those things are not mandatory and that they don't have any impact on a person's participation in the larger team and so on. And that's something that, again, Fisher has been very clear, and those around the program have been very clear in saying that he makes that as clear as possible for players to, you know, have the option to do what they want in those respects. But to make sure, as with everything, that Fisher has as much support for his players in all sorts of respects, whether that's on the field, whether that's academically, or whether that's also spiritually. He wants them to have as much in the way of resources as possible so that they can be developed you know, this is something you hear a lot with Jimbo, is he wants his players to be developed as men as much as possible. And he really, you know, a lot of coaches give lip service to that, but Fisher, you know, in my interactions with him over the years, really believes it. I mean, I remember coming in after the 2013 season, and he was telling me that he was as proud as anything of a recent report that he had gotten from someone who had been around the athletic department and was saying, you know, you can really tell your football guys, you can tell which guys are football guys because, you know, they really are courteous and polite in the hallway, and they always say hello, they always look you in the eye, you know, they always shake your hand and these sorts of things. And, you know, that's not true for every sport, and that's certainly not true at, you know, across the board at different athletic departments. And you could see how proud he was of talking about this. And this was, you know, a private conversation, you know, behind the scenes, where he brought that up and he said, you know what I'm really proud about? We've had some success on the field, but this tells me that we're doing the right thing developing these young men. And I'm so proud that, you know, that's something that even the guys that don't go on, even the guys that don't play in the pros or whatever, this is something that's going to stick with them and make them successful and help them to be good fathers and so on for the rest of their lives, to be able to have that kind of support and for us to be able to work with them and to help these kids who may not have become that. That's something that he said, you know, that was something that has made him as proud as anything, to be a part of the program and to have things going that way. So on that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap this program, get this out as soon as possible. But we'll probably have one more, a little bit shorter update after the weekend, basically give the last few things to expect going into National Signing Day. But Florida State stands in as good a position as any to finish with a top four, top five class. So a lot of positives for Florida State out there. Now, don't forget, this is five-star season. Please rate this podcast and give us effusive praise in the comment section on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend. Spread this out as much as possible on social media. Get us to the place where we're able to attract more and more listeners. Helps us be able to get more stuff out in the future. But until then, until after this weekend when we're going to have that update, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.